Support for the Media Project comes from the College of St. Rose, Albany, New York, offering a Master of Arts in Communications to advance careers in media, PR, and journalism. Fuller part-time options, 518-454-5143. From Northeast Public Radio, this is the Media Project, a weekly discussion about issues confronting the media.
Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime, and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk, pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it, it's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press.
The Media Project is underway here from Northeast Public Radio. I'm Rex Smith, editor of the Times Union, with Rosemary Armeo, investigative reporter and professor at the University of Albany.
Thank you. Happy to be here again.
Wonderful to see you. And Dr. Alan Shartok, the CEO of Northeast Public Radio, columnist, commentator, gadfly about town. No, that's probably a pejorative. I wouldn't call you a gadfly. I would call you a...
Dragonfly?
I think that the insect references should just go away.
I promised my lovely wife, Roselle, I wasn't taking the bait.
You're not. Excellent. We'll just dang a little more in front of you. All right. Well, so we are hopeful that this program will come to you absent intervention by the Syrian Electronic Army, whatever that may be. I mean, it has a name that's reminiscent of the SLA, doesn't it? I don't mean the State Liquor Authority. I mean the Symbionese Liberation Army. So anyway, this is actually a very serious matter because within the past number of days, the New York Times website was taken down by this outfit claiming to be the Syrian Electronic Army, suggesting that this vaunted expansion of information that we have in this digital age is itself quite vulnerable.
That's a great point. I mean, it really is, because it just shows anybody can do anything to anybody on the web. We all know that. We're all sick and tired of getting garbage we don't want, you know, all of the spam and all the rest of it. But this is to the provider, to the New York Times. And the New York Times, I am sure, has the latest and bestest of the protection devices. This is really, since we're all going to the internet, and since we've been discussing that for weeks here, Rex, for months and years.
Years, yes.
Yeah. And how this is happening, it does show that there's a potential here for real trouble.
Could this happen at WAMC or at the Times Union?
Yes.
And yes.
Yes, absolutely.
We break down with some regularity without any help from the
exactly.
from the Symbionese Liberation Army.
Well, the town of Colony had a problem with this not so long ago. I work on the library board there, and the town site was hacked into apparently by, I don't know, Russian mobsters who
really?
Yeah.
Mm.
And they had to they went down for a while and had to upgrade and change things around.
Why would a Russian mobster care about
it?
Because do you know about this? Because they're looking for money. Any way you can get identities of people, you can find out money. If you have a town, there's money.
No, that's not the story I heard. There was an ex-retired editor, a Russian newspaper, who was ticked off that the library wasn't carrying his book.
He's making this up entirely. This goes to show you can't believe everything you hear in the mainstream media.
Joke. Which is another point, Rex.
Oh.
You can't really absolutely believe that it was the Syrian so-and-so army, because it could have been anybody saying they were the Syrian so-and-so army. And that is why it gets really dangerous here. I mean, has the FBI ever played tricks on anybody? Has the CIA ever played tricks on anybody? I mean,
or just any kid, any high school kid with talent.
Sure.
And
there are a lot of them. Or a junior high school kid.
Yeah.
More likely.
I mean, if the U.S. government computers can be hacked, then of course media computers and distribution kind of outlets, technology can be vulnerable. So what do we do about that?
Well, there's always been a vulnerability. You know, I remember a newspaper during a labor strife years ago was brought to its knees by a pressman who simply threw a wrench into the works of a press, which fouled the gear. Yes, that was effective. And it stopped the press, literally. So, you know, there's always a vulnerability.
There is.
actually, which is an interesting element, as fewer presses exist, there is less backup for when there is electronic failure or press failure or a power outage. Newspapers have always had a backup plan. There's always an emergency plan for if my press goes down, then
you
I
go
print
to Schenectady.
It elsewhere. Right. That, if, for example, in our, yes.
Yeah. But the interesting thing about the Times was when this happened, it of course shut down their electronic, their 24/7 operation. The
well, I was looking at it all night long and I was getting it, so I don't quite understand.
Some people were and some were not. Some still are not. Yeah. But the next day, the paper came out, and it was fine. It just felt horribly old because we have lost the idea now that we can wait until the next day to find out stuff.
Yeah.
Well, so they were hurt badly.
Speaking of which, if I can just bring it along a little bit because this is getting kind of boring. Right?
I was actually had a point and, that and I was going to make earlier, but you were interrupted and took
mostly
it back.
It's your fault. But go ahead.
I was just going to say that as these old print products that Rosemary's referring to, I was about to say that because there are fewer presses now, you know, the press in Troy that used to publish the Kingston Daily Freeman, the Troy Record, and the Saratogian now is shutting down, and that is printed in our shop. And presses all over the country, Poughkeepsie is no longer printed in Poughkeepsie.
Has anybody brought this to the Justice Department? This is business about your paper publishing publishing everybody's
papers?
We don't
own it. We just print it. But that means that there are fewer places for backup. And so if the Times Union print channel goes down, where do you go? And that makes it all the more likely that there will be, that print might not actually show up in your doorstep someday. Anyway.
I once had a very special woman friend, young woman when I was at
UCLA. Do we really want to know this?
Well, I used to have anything to do with media.
Yes. I used to visit her, and her father was a big shot in the Teamsters Union.
Uh-huh.
And you couldn't really get to talk to the girl until you spent some time with the father. And the father one day said to me, and it gets to Rex's point about the monkey wrench in the press, we didn't pull those axles out from those trucks. They just fell out.
They just fell out. Yeah, this happens, you know.
Well, I just wanted to say I spent the summer in Eastern Europe, and we spent tons of time on computer security, encrypting our messages, the way we send chats to one another, how we talk to each other, how we store stories. And, of course, anybody who really wanted to find out what we're doing could still cut through all of that, which is a little bit depressing. I have, like, volumes that I have to read to figure out how to use this stuff now to use
my computer. Like the old days when Linda Ellerbe thought she was writing, I think, a letter to her boyfriend.
Ooh, yeah.
And it got onto the AP wire.
Oh, no.
Everybody got it.
Oh, dear. Actually, we're about to do an hour-long session in our newsroom, a brown bag, around the issue of encryption. You know, we've always taken care, the people who are working on sensitive stories have always taken care about source relationships, about making sure that they're careful about where they make phone calls and so on. But we actually are believing that it's necessary for us to use some simple forms of encryption.
Good point, because it isn't the Syrian electronic army that we only have to fear. It's NSA or government officials trying to figure out who we're talking to and getting our stories from.
I think
it's
absolutely right. If the NSA is going after the national media, it won't be long before local officials will be going after local publications like the Times Union. And so we need to, in effect, protect ourselves from the overreach of government.
But no, I'm feeling more and more like a spy.
Well,
I really am.
Somebody asked me if you were a spy the other day.
I get asked if I'm a missionary, too. Yeah, you're right. You leave the borders.
Oh,
and
man.
You're a missionary or a spy?
A missionary for...
I'm not going there because I could, you know.
Journalism.
But I wanted to ask you. I wanted to ask you a question, Rex.
And what that's would like that
three,
be about?
That's like three positions removed from a dirty joke. Okay, so, so you have to really think about it. Okay, so, but I'm going to ask you a question, Rex. You were very fascinating a few seconds ago, as usual. Huh. You said, you know, the brown bag. Mm-hmm. And that leads me to believe, because, you know, we have some of those luncheon meetings. As soon as we have a luncheon meeting here, we don't brown bag it. We buy the pizza. So is the Hearst Corporation so cheap that you make them bring their brown bags with them?
We provide cookies and coffee, and people bring their own lunch to these brown bags. So it's
can outside people come? Can we crash the party?
Outside people, you could probably come.
Okay, we would
invite you. That'd be good.
Yeah, you could probably come.
In fact, I might even
and I'll eat a cookie.
I'll buy you a sandwich. In fact, that would be that'd be my generosity.
But not Alan.
I was about to say, not so much.
Alan doesn't. You know, Alan's dietary restrictions restrictions are such that we wouldn't be able to afford for him.
Which is really one of the problems with being on the radio all the time, because no matter where I go, if I have steak, or the other night I had rack of lamb,
ooh,
and the guy from the next table pops up and says, I'm telling.
This is the Media Project from WAMC in Albany. Alan Shartok, Rosemary Armeo, and Rex Smith, and we're glad to have you with us. If you want to participate, send us some mail at media@wamc.org. That is the electronic version. You don't have to encrypt it. We don't think anybody's going to be looking in at this moment, but, you know, it could happen. Speaking of the digital world changing, this is one of Alan's favorite targets, and that is anonymous comments on blogs, which the Huffington Post has just announced that it will no longer accept. Huffington Post says that the moderators, they have about 40 moderators on all these blogs, quote, will be freed up to engage more with the community, facilitating the kinds of productive conversations our community members want to be having. So, what do we think?
Hooray! Yeah. I am so pleased. It really, you know, is just what I've been praying for a long time. You know, so many of these sites are just so bad that people just come on. Papers don't have enough moderators. They don't have enough people. They say the weirdest, lousiest things about anybody they want, and they get away with it. It's crazy, and they don't have to sign their names.
I wish that I could say, wow, let's keep it anonymous and we'll have really intelligent, thoughtful, provoking conversations. But in truth, what's happening is the trolls are getting very scary. They're making incredible, violent threats against women. Arianna Huffington, before this, she took this action, commented on some of the things that they were getting, you know, threatening rape and worse. And I mean, really, let's get rid of it.
And racist stuff gets on.
Well, letters to the editor even are filled with that. But
letters to the editor, in most cases, you got to sign.
Yeah, exactly.
But I've seen these sites. There's one company that has a site in virtually every city. And I've seen, you know, the N-word used and things like that.
Well, it's because the Huffington Post receives 25,000 comments each hour. Wow. So even if they have 40 moderators looking this stuff over, they can't stop it. So, you know, our difficulty at the Times Union, I can offer a little bit of a defense of anonymous comments. I have mixed feelings about this because...
you know that every time you clear your throat, you're lying. You're about to lie.
We have been really trying very hard to push our blog moderators to be more careful, that is, to stop more stuff.
Yeah.
And a lot of the people who moderate our blogs, we have citizen blogs and we have staff blogs. And a lot of people say, no, anything should go. We should let people have their say. And I think that your point is well taken, that a better community is created by having more moderation, by saying, no, you have to have more responsible commentary. But
so
within,
what will they have to do? Will they have to sign their names?
For Huffington Post? Yeah,
yeah,
supposedly. Of course, it's very hard to, because you have to assure... Because you can have a fake name,
or you can sign somebody else's name.
You could. So how are they going to track it? It's going to be very hard.
Well, it's just a threshold protection. And other things will be, moderation will change. You know, I used to really think, let everything go. That's what the internet should be for. And then I began blogging for the Times Union and seeing some of the comments you get. And I'm now really in favor of this. People are so angry and racist and other things, sexist. And it just can't, we shouldn't be printing this.
Not only that, but I just think, you know, there's only a couple of them. I know the blogs that I look at, you know, the responders always have these phony names.
Yeah.
And you see them again and again and again and again.
That's true. I know a couple of them because I've watched them at the TU, the community blogs. They'll go from one person to another and just trash. And the other, the actual readers, the people who are caring and listening and pay attention, will always out them and just say, okay, knock it off. Here's what we really... But still, why waste the time? Why do that at all? I really am now. I'm an editor. Let's edit them out.
There's a fine local blog here called Oliver Albany, created by a couple of WAMC alums. And I remember talking to one of the founders of Oliver Albany and saying, you know, I so admire the community you people have created because it's so thoughtful. And I would say really interesting that only people who have good things to say and commentary that is valuable seem to respond to Oliver Albany. And he said, no.
Not at all.
We cut out all the other stuff, you know. And it really made me think. This is about 3 years ago. And I started to think, yeah, maybe we should be more aggressive about stopping trolls. Yes.
If I may just have 1 second of your time. I think there's another thing that happens, and both of you are very good points, and that is the respectable people see that these things become trash piles,
right.
And they say, well, we don't want to get associated with it.
Yes. That's true.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely. That's really a good point. So anyway, if you all think that this is wrong, listeners, if you think that anonymous comments are a good thing. Now, by the way, Alan, on WAMC, you have listener comment, the listener comment
we
line.
Do.
And those people actually give their names, right?
They don't. I don't think they have to.
They don't have to.
I think they could say, you know, Alan from Great Barrington if they wanted to do that.
Uh-huh.
But many of them want to.
And you don't air, anyway, bad things. I mean, you don't air
lousy
stuff.
Well, let's put it this way. We have cuts, and we will edit. So if it's a long, long diatribe,
right.
You know, we'll try to cut out the meat and give you the meat.
Okay, so here is a question, actually, that I'll pose to you that was posed by our columnist and state editor, Casey Seiler, who said, who would you trust more to cover NFL? Would it be ESPN or Al Jazeera America? Isn't that a wonderful point?
That's a great question.
Because, now here's the question about the ESPN, because ESPN, as I think listeners of WAMC have probably heard, has been engaged in preparing an investigative piece about the NFL's response to head injuries. And perhaps it's coincidental, but perhaps it's not. ESPN has pulled its involvement. That is, it doesn't want to have its name affiliated with the investigation, which has not yet aired. And of course, it is remarkable to note, perhaps not at all coincidental, that ESPN pays literally billions of dollars to the NFL to be able to air NFL football.
Now, who is ESPN owned by? This is a rhetorical question.
ESPN is 80% owned by Walt Disney and 20% by Hearst Corporation.
Oh, you see, I didn't even know that. So your two corporations are sort of in bed with each other,
basically,
Disney and
yeah, it's basically run by Disney, my impression. I don't know. I'm not engaged at that level of the Hearst Corporation. Of course, I merely run the newsroom at one of the properties, but I think that Hearst just basically drops by to pick up its checks.
Check.
But
does Zenya Muka still work for Disney?
I don't know.
For those of you who think this is all inside baseball, first she worked for D'Amato, then she worked for Pataki and ran the operation there, and she's a communications specialist and very hard driving person, very hard driving. And I just wondered whether she was still
That's
at
a
Disney.
Very interesting question. That would be instructive. It would be wonderful at some point to get a sense of what Zenya Muka is doing. I think that I would love to see where her role is at Walt Disney. It'd be very interesting. Anyway, there are these two wonderful reporters, Steve Finaru and his brother Mark Finaru Wada, who are both investigative reporters. One won a Pulitzer Prize at the Washington Post. The other should have at the San Francisco Chronicle for their uncovering of drugs in baseball. And they've been leading this investigation. They have an upcoming book. There's a Frontline documentary coming that will air on ESPN called League of Denial, the NFL Concussion and the Battle for the Truth. And they say that before they joined ESPN from their respective former homes, they knew about the sort of competing interests, the built-in conflict of interest in effect. But the question is, does this mean that their reporting is going to be inhibited anyway? Does it mean that if somehow ESPN is going to say, okay, I'm backing off from the
What do
the
you
worker?
Think, Rex?
I think it's one of those really difficult situations that is created.
I think if it walks like a duck.
but the proof will be in the pudding, won't it? I think the reporting is going to be
the bottom line on this whole controversy for me is what kind of owners of media we have these days, and there is a conflict of interest here. You cannot serve different masters, and what suffers has been the investigative reporting in this case. And I don't think in this particular story there'll be a problem getting it out. It'll be aired someplace.
Well,
it shouldn't have happened this way.
Isn't there a lawsuit going on about the concussions?
Yeah.
And so how that gets covered and all the rest of it?
Right.
This story will come out, but this particular reporting by this brother team, which is really excellent, they thought that they had protected themselves. They said, hey, this is what we're doing. There was no secrecy about it. They were definitely hard-hitting. So why then are they hired to do this and now there's a problem over it? It's because of a corporate conflict of interest.
ESPN says to offer their line that it ended the partnership with Frontline because of misunderstandings about who had editorial control over the documentary.
Well, duh.
Not because of its broadcast deal with the NFL.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, makes you wonder. You know, there's always the chance for the commercial interest of a media outlet to be intersecting with the editorial side. I mean, in every newspaper, there's an advertising department and there's a newsroom. But because ESPN is a fairly new entity, I don't think we know where the boundaries are, you know, where that wall is.
Well, we're learning, and it isn't good.
No, and human behavior is human behavior. You know, you're a squat guy in a suit with a cigar in your mouth, and you're sitting there, you know, and somebody comes.
Is this a stereotype unbefitting?
Yes, it is. Yeah. And somebody
sounds just like me.
And somebody comes in and says somebody's going to affect the bottom line here, and you react accordingly. I mean, I think there's that. Hey, Rex, I'd like to reserve, if the speaker would not mind, or I would like to reserve a minute towards the end.
The gentleman from Great Barrington. Go right ahead.
I just wanted to talk a little bit about my amazement that Elliot Spitzer, the comptroller candidate in New York, who's running against the organizational candidate, a guy by the name of Scott Stringer, who has been endorsed by almost every politician and every newspaper in New York, is apparently leading by 19 points, according to the last poll that we saw from Quinnipiac, which is literally a day or so ago. He, of course, buys a lot of advertising, there's no question, and he lays out his case and he says why he's doing what he's doing. But it is interesting that when three newspapers in New York, directly related to the Media Project, put another way, say, you know, this is who you should vote for, and the voters don't listen. That's interesting stuff.
How much do you think it has to do in that particular race? I mean, I can argue both sides of this, but with the fact that notwithstanding a campaign effort by Scott Stringer, nobody down there knows him by comparison to the name Elliot Spitzer. How many people are just offering their opinion to the pollsters based upon, I know Elliot Spitzer, I'm willing to vote for him? So you're making the contention that people intentionally saying, I don't like the editorials of the
newspapers. I know, I'm not going to listen to the editorials.
I don't think they even noticed the editorials.
I wish the newspapers were important enough that they would take a stand.
Well, no, you know, I was in a gym one day. We were working out with this nice lady on the next bike. And I said, who are you voting for? She said, I don't know any of them. I just do what the Times tells me.
Uh-huh.
So I think that there certainly are some people
like,
particularly on the Upper West Side.
You could make the same case, actually, that you're making in the race for mayor of New York City, where the Quinnipiac poll, if it's to be believed, says that the clear front runner now is Bill de Blasio, notwithstanding the fact that all three of the newspapers in New York City have endorsed Chris Quinn, which is an unusual thing. I've never seen a trifecta like that, where the Post, the Daily News, and the New York Times all have the same endorsement. They've all endorsed Christine Quinn. Notwithstanding that, de Blasio has surged in the polls, if you believe Quinnipiac, if you think that their polling points are correct. So do you think that what that suggests you're saying is that you seem to be happy, therefore, the newspaper endorsements don't make any difference?
Well, I'm delighted because I think
why
so.
Is that? You think that it's better for people to see editorial
I think there's
boards
a sense
kind
of entitlement and pomposity on the part of newspapers.
Well, that has nothing to do with the value of an editorial. You know, an editorial board supposedly knows something, has done some research. I mean, I like to, our editorial board interviews people. We think about it.
I'm reading the New York Post this morning. They want us to go into the war, the POSD, I should say, want us to go into a war with Syria. And they have four columnists, incidentally, are all making the point, or two or three columns. And the editorial page and the clear gist of it is, who is this? This is, I have to assume, Rupert Murdoch. Maybe I'm wrong, but I think I'm right. In the case of the Daily News, it's a guy by the name of Zuckerman. You never know where he is on anything except where it's convenient.
So they're using their newspapers to promote a political
agenda.
Would you feel
the Times, I want to just say that while I've had issues with the Times, I think the Times does it right. I think they make the rational kind of argument, except in the case of Elliot Spitzer.
Ah.
So what you're really saying, Alan, is that sometimes you agree with them and sometimes you don't.
And he likes it when they disagree, when they agree,
then they're right. But that's what an editorial is. It's a position of opinion. You read it and you can yell at it that it's completely wrong or you like it.
Murdoch and Zuckerman are?
Murdoch and Zuckerman definitely use their papers to promote a point of view.
I got to close this down. We're over time.
Good.
Getting dangerous.
They wallow in corruption, crime, and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk. Pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it. It's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press. Now you remember Mrs. Sadie Smuggery. She wanted money to buy a new fur coat. To get insurance, she employed skullduggery. She up and cut her husband's only throat. She chopped him into fragments, she stuffed him in a trunk. She shipped it all back yonder to her uncle in Podunk. Now newspaper men meet such interesting people. It must have startled poor old Sadie's unk. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, city desk. Hold the press, extra, extra, read all about it. It's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspaper men meet...